ball spark.
You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP.
Good Tuesday morning out there, Western, Northwestern Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, The Sports Animal. Glad to have you along today. We are Woodward, KSIWKADS in Elk City. You know?
What?
You'd like to think that people know when this show is on. Apparently, Mark Rogers doesn't care.
What is he texting you about?
I don't know. Something about Elk City football. We'll have to look at it later.
He's trying to get you to do his work.
No, I think it's something different. Okay. It's a big old long message. Anyhow, was that a humble brag?
What?
Like, oh, Mark's texting me.
Oh.
How do you feel about that?
Oh, you're big leaguing us. That's what you're doing. That's what I did to Dakota at the softball field.
Yeah, he's still not over it.
I still feel bad about that.
Dakota's still not over it.
He walked right by him. He looks at me and says, "Hey." And I didn't recognize him immediately because he had a hat on and sunglasses. And I just go, "Hello." And walked right on by.
Matter of fact, he hasn't texted the show since
He's burned us.
Thanks a lot.
I feel so bad about it. We lost a listener because I accidentally big leagued somebody.
Yeah, that's really good, Jared. We're trying to
build
the audience.
If we ever get shirts, we'll just give him one.
He can have one. All right, coming up on the show today, maybe we'll get to Aaron Rodgers. I would guess that we are the only show that hasn't even really talked about. We talked about his Jeopardy performance in the guest host role, but really I haven't talked about, as far as him and the Packers, it looks like it's just falling apart. Also, Kyler Murray. See his little blog post over the weekend?
About the Cowboys?
Not a fan.
He's not a fan.
Not much of a Cowboys
fan.
Not a fan
of his hometown Cowboys.
Not much at all. U.S. Open, we'll kind of get into it before we make the picks tomorrow with Torrey Pines. You know, one of the greatest things about these tournaments, these majors being on the West Coast, is primetime golf.
Right.
You know, to 8
right.
or 9 o'clock on a Saturday
evening.
You're
not seeing a replay.
That's right. It's live. But we're not going to get that on Sunday.
No. They're going to start really early?
It's going to start early because of the Olympic trials for something.
Oh,
got a big boo for that.
Jeez.
Kinda,
big boo that this thing's going to be on something called, like the first two rounds, something called Peacock.
It's going to be all over the place. It's going to be all over the place. We'll be able to watch it. Trust me, we'll be able to watch it. Maybe not how you want to. Maybe you'll have to change the channel from hour to hour.
Whatever.
You'll be able to watch some of it, for sure.
I'm just tired of them pushing, you have to subscribe to our latest streaming service if you want to watch the golf, or if
welcome,
you want to watch this.
Welcome to 2021, Jared.
I guess I'm an old guy now.
You are.
I'm an old fogey.
Golf, get off Jared's lawn. It's hard to be an old fogey with golf, and you're doing it. Congratulations. It's kind of what everybody that likes golf is an old fogey, and you're making it even worse. All right, John Rahm, do we think that he got $1.7 million stolen from him a couple weeks ago for a false positive? He sure got over COVID pretty quick, didn't he?
Yeah.
Outside of him, which he's been playing fantastic when he's got to play, the big names, maybe not on their top form. So does that open it up to somebody else? And then also Torrey Pines, where the golf tournament will be. Is there any chance they can top the drama from the last time they held the U.S. Open? Do you know what that was off the top of your head?
No. I'm not as good with the golf history lessons like you are.
Tiger Woods, broken leg, winner.
Well, I guess I should have known that. You said it yesterday.
Yeah, I did. NBA playoffs, we'll hit that at the first. Why does Joel Embiid hate me, Jared? He clearly does, going 0 for 12 in the second half and missing a game-winning layup so that you continue to be with the chance to win a burrito. Unbelievable, Joel Embiid. I may start hating you.
Maybe stop doubting me.
0 for 12 from
I said
the
7.
0 for 12 from the runner-up for MVP. A lot of people thought if he played enough games, he would have been the MVP. And he misses a point-blank layup.
Maybe.
Unbelievable.
I know what I'm talking about.
No, you clearly don't.
Maybe I'm right more often than
not.
The luck
truck was in Atlanta last night, helping you stay in the bet. But Sixers probably still win the next two, and I'll win. Suns sweep. Everybody else is tied 2-2. Are the Bucks now the favorite? No Harden, no Kyrie tonight, game five. Are the Bucks the favorite? And then Ty Lue. What is it about Ty Lue when his team is down in a series that he's able to get the best out of them? Clippers have come back from 0-2 in the first series against Dallas to win. No team has ever done that twice in the same playoff run. And now here you go. Lose the first two in Utah. Tie it back up 2-2 as the scene shifts back to Salt Lake City. Does he have some magic formula? I don't know. His team sure plays pretty good when they're behind. Think 2016 finals, down 3-1 in Cleveland to the Warriors, and then come back to win. I don't know. Maybe we should pick his brain about that. Somebody needs to. His team sure seem to play really well when they're behind. Good morning, Jared Atha.
How are you?
I'm a little bit disappointed, just to be quite honest, in Philly. In particular, Joel Embiid. You've got to be kidding me. Philly's up 60-42 in the second quarter. I can already taste the delicious breakfast burrito that you're going to owe me because of just a horrible bet that you made. And then all of a sudden, the Atlanta Hawks rally around Trae Young, and Joel Embiid goes 0-12 in the second half. That is the most attempts without a make in a half in a playoff game in the past 25 years. He misses a point-blank layup with 7 seconds to go down one. So why does Joel Embiid hate me? We've never said a harsh word about him in the 3.5 years of this show.
I think I have, maybe.
Have you? Well, then that all the more reason to dunk it and win the game. Joel, it was Jared picking on you, not Aaron. I'm on your side.
You are like the mad Philly fan on anger management. You got to dunk that. He was a Philly fan. It was that anger management listening to the game.
I bet you that guy screamed that.
You got to dunk that. We can't say it. You got to dunk that.
When it happened.
Was that you?
When it happened, I bet that same
you have
guy
Iverson
screamed
jersey
that.
On, screaming at the television. You got to dunk that. That's funny. No, yeah, they got to learn to close out better. Clearly, right? You can't let a team like Trae Young hang around. With Trae Young hang around.
Well, and that's the problem now. For
now they have
thinking
hope.
About it. I know, young team hasn't really been in the playoffs. And it's amazing how that comeback changes narratives on both sides. You know, because you go down 3-1 if you're Atlanta. It's like, oh, this is a cute story. You guys are on the rise. You're one of the teams to maybe look out for in the future. But you're not there yet. You're down 3-1 in this conference semifinals and really got pretty well pasted after halftime of game one when they built that giant lead and almost gave it up. And then Philly really controlled game two, game three, and the first half of game four. It looked like it was just Atlanta was completely overmatched. And then all of a sudden, things switch, and now it's like, whoa, 2-2. If Atlanta wins this, they're a player away from being a contender. Or can they make the finals? You know, with it's amazing how those narratives switch by a 7-foot-1 guy not being able to make a wide-open layup. But that's what happened. Trae was outstanding last night, youngest guy in the history of the league with a 25-point, 15-assist playoff game. You know, and it feels like we mentioned something like that at the end of every one of these games for Atlanta. The youngest to do this, the youngest to do that. How much better is Trae Young than you thought he was going to be?
I think I thought he was going to be good because he was already getting those comparisons, the Steph Curry comparisons coming out of college. So I thought that would translate over to the pro game pretty good. My only worry was, would he land on a team that would never give him help? And it appears Atlanta is on the right path. You know, it's amazing. They are probably one piece away from being really, really good. But I heard this said yesterday. I'll give credit to Trammell, who said this. I don't think he's done getting – his ceiling hasn't – he hasn't hit his ceiling yet.
You wouldn't think so. He's 22.
With how young he is. I mean, we remember what 22-year-olds look like in Oklahoma City and how good they got. That's what's – if you're a Trae Young Atlanta Hawks fan, you should be really excited because that's he hasn't reached. I mean, he hasn't. I think we're just scratching the surface of how good Trae Young is. But to answer your question, was I shocked? Am I shocked that he's this good right now? Not really.
I mean, come on. You really thought he was going to be a top 10 player in the league his third year?
I thought he would transfer over and be good.
He's a super duper star already.
Yeah, because he's in this round, the playoffs.
Well, that's where you get to be super duper star.
Yeah.
Kevin Love isn't a super duper star because he couldn't do it in the playoffs. He did it at Minnesota during the regular season and never got there.
Yeah.
You have to do it in the brightest moments. It's shocking to me. I mean, everybody thought he was going to be good, but not this good. No way you thought he was going to be this good already. Maybe.
Well, I think that's how I answered the question. I said he'd be good. I thought he would be good. But this good?
I mean, a guaranteed all-star year after year after year.
Well, being drafted back then, I wouldn't have said he's going to be this good in 3 years.
But that's what I'm saying.
What I'm saying is it didn't shock me that – how many times have we seen top five picks be bust?
A lot.
And I did not expect that at all from Trae Young. I expected him to be good. It's just a matter of could he find help where he was going to be. I was hoping that Atlanta would suck and that he'd want to go. You know what? I own a home in Norman. When my rookie contract's up and I have a choice, I'm leaving. But it doesn't appear. No. I think he'd rather stay in Atlanta and they're going to build around him. They're going to be really good.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
They got a chance to be really good.
It will be interesting to see because at the same time, you've also seen some guys kind of burst onto the scene. And you're thinking, oh, my gosh, just thinking 3 years how good he is. And it doesn't really happen. You know, you hit your ceiling faster than what you think. Mm-hmm. It certainly doesn't appear that that's going to be the case with him because of the way the league is going. His defensive deficiencies are masked a little bit by the way the game is played.
Yep.
You know, he doesn't have somebody just backing him down, posting up, because that's just not what they do anymore. So that's helpful. And I think the Steph Curry comparisons are apt with the way that he plays and the way that he's able to make his guys better. That's the one thing that I think we saw for the most part at OU was that he was able to make guys around him better, and he's done that in the pros as well. And so that's, you know, he's been I don't know that anybody will ever admit that draft night trade is as close as it is right now with him and Doncic.
Yeah.
You know, Doncic is always going to be the perceived winner of that. But I think it's a little bit closer than people think. And damn sure closer than people thought.
Yeah, well, somebody's still playing and someone's not.
Yeah, and that's, you know, team and all that. But and being in the East, I think it's going to help him. Just with the guards
the Nets and everybody else.
And all that kind of thing. But he's been great. There's no doubt about it. And he was, you know, not as efficient as normal, only 8 of 26. That 3 of 11 number from 3 isn't very good, but 25 and 18 and a plus 7 on the ninth. The only Hawks starter that was a plus in the plus minus last night was Trae Young, 103-100. We really didn't get to talk much yesterday about the Suns sweeping away of the Denver Nuggets. First off, I asked Jim, and he kind of – he didn't dodge, but he kind of deflected and said he hoped this isn't the case. But in your mind – with the Jokic foul, I mean, first off, are you in agreement that it was ridiculous to kick him out of the game?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
The MVP, the reigning MVP, the newly minted MVP, gets kicked out of the game for a frustration foul, which is totally ridiculous. And I'm serious about this. In my mind, there is no chance that if that was LeBron James, Kevin Durant, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, litany of MVPs from the past, Steph Curry in that list as well. There's no chance in the world that they get kicked out for that same foul.
Absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. It's a European thing. I have other opinions about it, but it no.
Well, it's just he's not well known enough. Even though he is the MVP, he doesn't have that cachet, and he doesn't have, you know, that whatever you want to call it, the respect level that he deserves because he just did win the MVP. But, I mean, there's a pretty good chance, in my mind, that he's going to be the most disrespected MVP of all time in the league. You know, and I think part of that may stem from a Euro. I think also part of it is he wasn't supposed to be this good. He was the 42nd pick in the draft, the only second-round pick ever to win the MVP.
He was still on the board when the Thunder drafted Josh Eustace.
Oh, he's probably still on the board when they drafted somebody else in the second round.
Yeah.
And the, and
he
listen,
was drafted in
not
the
just
middle
the Thunder.
Of a Taco Bell commercial.
Yeah, it's not just the Thunder either. Oh, yeah. Everybody had a couple of shots at him.
Yeah.
But it's irritating because of all the guys, he doesn't do anything to anybody. And he apologized. How many guys do you think apologize for that foul? Nobody else would because they don't see the problem with it. I hated that. The Suns are still winning that series and maybe even that game. But I just hate the way that it ended for Jokic when it doesn't – there's no way it ends that way for all those other guys that were able to win the MVP. You'll never convince me that they're kicking LeBron James out of the game for that foul the way they did Jokic.
No.
On the other side, though, Chris Paul, phenomenal. He averaged 25 and 10, the oldest guy ever to average 25 points and 10 assists in a playoff series. And that team, we saw it here last year, really seen it most of his career. Wherever he's been, they win.
Yeah.
And he is such a winning force with the way that he plays basketball. And the one thing that I like about the way they play, they're kind of bucking every bit of the analytics.
Right.
They take more mid-range jump shots than anybody.
Yeah.
He takes them, but he's a master at them.
Yeah.
I think he went 6 of 6 in the third quarter two nights ago on Sunday night. That tied LeBron James back in like 2011 or 12 for the most makes in the mid-range in a quarter in like 30 years. And they're just fun to watch. They've got the mix of his leadership, you know, the Monty Williams story. With what happened here, losing his wife in the car wreck, and he actually referenced that after the game on Sunday night that Chris Paul was a big part of him getting over that. So he's like, in my worst moment, there was Chris, and now right now in my greatest achievement, there he is again. You know, I think that's a pretty cool link between those two guys.
Yeah, yeah. I watching Chris Paul play makes me want to eat salad every day, right?
Yeah.
It's the plant-based diet. Clearly, it's what's rejuvenating his career. You mentioned yesterday about the untradeable contract that was perceived being Chris Paul in Westbrook, but thinking you can't trade him. It's going to be so hard to move him. And I think even if he does not perform throughout the entire contract, you know what I'm saying? He's still such a valuable piece just to have on your team and in your locker room. Am I right? Even if the ability is gone, you still want him. You want that. You want him in your atmosphere because he creates that positive atmosphere. That's where I think the value is in Chris Paul.
Yeah.
You talk about making other people better around mm-hmm. him. That's him. That he did that in the 1 year here where they exceeded expectations. You know, and you get him with the right, you know, cast of characters around him that are willing to, you know, learn from him because he's been in the league for a long time and he's such a good player. And when he's healthy, he's really good. That's almost more valuable than the play itself sometimes.
Yeah, I thought Jim brought up an interesting point because, you know, he's got that 46-something million dollar option. It's a player option. And on the surface, you're thinking, well, yeah, he's clearly going to exercise that because no one's going to pay him $46 million, even though he's been fantastic. It's right. Just not happening. But then I guess what he's wanting to do is secure more years for less money. So if he waives that, and then, you know, Jim brought up 5 years, $100 million. I don't – 5 years, he's 36, right? Seems a little long. Yeah, he's 36.
Yeah.
Just turned 36. But I think also the way that he was talking about, you know, trying to structure that deal, if you pay him a bunch of it up front and then the last couple years, it's not nearly as draining on the cap. That does make sense to try to, you know, get those last maybe two good years out of Chris Paul before, you know, he kind of changes. But, yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail right on the head. Having him around is clearly good for teams. Everywhere he's been, he's been a winner. Maybe not to the ultimate level yet. I mean, I think this is just the second conference finals that his teams have ever gotten to. But he fosters a winning attitude. And I think he's one of the few guys in the league that's able to kind of get on the young guys and they don't resent him. And that's pretty special skill
yeah.
that he doesn't – I mean, you know, there's been for years talking about playing with like LeBron and how much of a grind that is. I mean, you know, Chris Paul with his competitiveness is on their tail over and over, but he does it in a way where people love him. It's just a different style, I guess, and a personality, and maybe not quite as forceful or what have you, but it's sure working out wherever he goes. In Phoenix, they've been dominant so far in these playoffs. And you think back, going into that series against the Lakers, they were the underdog.
Sure they were.
Even though they were the 2 seed versus the 7, they were the underdog.
Yeah.
And fortunate for them, Anthony Davis couldn't play. But with the way that they have played, I don't know that that matters.
As dominant as they've been. Yeah.
You know, they may win that series anyway.
More interesting series.
Yeah, they may not beat them by 40 the last couple games. But
right.
Phoenix is rolling. There's no doubt about that.
Are they considered a small market?
No.
Okay. Utah is.
Yeah, Utah for sure. Probably Denver.
It's just so refreshing if Utah can get past the Clippers to have a small and mid-market.
Man, if we could figure out a way for Utah to beat the Clippers and Milwaukee to beat the Nets, this would be the most fun conference finals in a while.
So now I would really then you start watching. To watch, other than just looking at the box score the next day.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would start to pay attention.
Do you think the Bucks are the favorite over the Nets right now? If I told you, okay, Harden doesn't play. Yeah, say Phoenix is the fourth largest city in the country.
It feels smaller. Every time I fly West Coast, I'm stopping in Phoenix or Denver, but it just feels like small market to me. I don't know if it's a desert or what. I don't know what it is. Just feels, but I knew it was a big city. Yeah, I just didn't know what was considered tiers of NBA cities.
Definite major market. Yeah. Definite.
Are they the favorite?
Are the Bucks the favorite?
Are the Bucks the favorite? I'm not ready to go there yet. I'm not. You mean the favorite in this series?
Yes.
No, I'm not ready to go there yet. I think Durant is still the best player in this series, and I think him knowing, I think it's, I don't know, it's such a weird way to look at it, but it was announced yesterday that Harden is not going to go and Kyrie's not going to play. With that much time in advance, Durant knows, okay, I don't have these guys. This is what I got to work with. This is how I get it done. See what I'm saying?
Oh, 100%.
So I think that's a positive for the Nets. And I think they still have a slight edge, very slight.
I think it'll be
interesting.
Is it
back in Brooklyn?
Yes, it is in Brooklyn.
Yeah, well, that's a big positive, too.
I think it'll be interesting to see his approach. You know, we can think back to the 2013 year when the Beverly-Westbrook thing happened against the Rockets, and then KD was on his own without Russ in the Memphis series. And that was a long time ago, he's a different player now, there's no doubt, a lot older and wiser.
A lot more burner accounts, too.
But I think then his idea was to score, take shots, score.
Right.
As his game has evolved, I'm anxious to see if that changes a little bit. If he will, you know, if he's more of the playmaker than he was then. I mean, he clearly is, but can he be when the chips are down like this? Or will he revert back to ISO, jump up over the top of the P.J. Tucker and try to shoot it over and over and over? Just reading right here, Vince Carter, he said KD's got to score 40 for them to win. I think that's probably kind of the narrative that's going to go into this game. I don't know if that's true, though, because of the way he can play make versus at other times in his career. But I will say this. If you're Giannis and you're Mike Budenholzer and you're that Milwaukee team and you can't figure out a way to win this series tied 2-2 with two of the best three players on the Nets out, that's embarrassing. You have to win this series if you're Milwaukee.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah, they're limping in. Yeah. I mean, I can't say it better than that.
Yeah, you have to win.
You have to win.
That's the bottom line. You have to win this series if you're the Bucks, and we'll see if they can do it. Man, that's the most NBA we've talked all year long.
Outside of draft possibilities for
the
Thunder.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, that's a week away.
It is a week away.
1 week from today. the lottery. Where will the Thunder end up? U.S. Open coming up on Thursday out in San Diego at Torrey Pines. It's a course that we're really familiar with because of the regular PGA Tour event that's played there at the first of every season, January, maybe early February, depending on how the dates fall. It's a place that has hosted one major, the U.S. Open, back in 2008. And what an event that was. With Tiger and Rocco Mediate, Lee Westwood coming down the stretch. Tiger Woods and Rocco Mediate both end up tied, play an 18-hole playoff that actually has to go 19 holes. And it's a tournament that Woods end up winning on a broken leg. And the images from that week, if you love golf or have watched golf for a long time, I mean, that's stuff that you can remember seeing. You know, the swings and almost fall into the ground at times because of the pain, but it was also the epitome of what Tiger Woods was and is mentally to be able to fight through it. But anyway, I mean, it's going to be hard to top that just because of the nature of the way that all went down. The golf course, like I said, you kind of know it. The different holes, obviously the 18th is one that a par five with the water in front, and it's had a bunch of memorable shots, some good, some bad, throughout the years. I remember maybe back in the mid-2000s coming down the stretch, Charles Howell being forced to lay up, down a shot, I think. He flies in the hole, it spits out and spins back in the water. He instead of three, ends up making seven or whatever, and he doesn't win the tournament or what have you. But you know, it's a fun golf course, and I love the West Coast stuff. I love that prime time golf, especially on the weekends. Like on Saturday, you know, the leaders won't tee off until, 4 or 5 o'clock our time. You'd be able to watch it all the way into the 9 o'clock hour here on Saturday. It's not going to be the same pace on Sunday because of the Olympic trials that NBC is going to telecast. So they'll start earlier. It finished more in the 6 or 7 o'clock range at our time, but those West Coast majors, man, it's outside of the Masters because the Masters is the best. Those West Coast majors are awesome to be able to watch. You know, when we get off work, it's just kind of the guys are just kind of into their rounds, yep, even on Thursday and Friday.
Yeah, that's a plus. That's awesome, and it's awesome because for the first time, and I can't remember, I got nothing going on this weekend, so I can sit inside in a cool air-conditioned building and watch this. The thing I'm going to keep an eye on, I think, for any novice golf fan, everyone's going to look at Phil, right? How's Phil? I know Phil has had his struggles here, this particular course.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because that's where he grew up,
right,
in San Diego.
How is he going to do, you know, fresh off of the major win? So that's what I'm interested in seeing.
Yeah,
we can talk about the Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka. You know, will they be paired together? Could they somehow come down the stretch on Sunday and all that? And that's good too. And we'll get to that discussion. But we haven't mentioned Phil. On, you know, can he? You know, he's been on the victory lap for a few weeks. Can he propel himself into some success this weekend?
I don't see it because of that. I mean, of course, you know what? If you'd asked me this a month and a half ago or whatever it was, 4 weeks ago, I'd have laughed at you. Yeah. If you'd have came with how do you think Phil's going to do in the PGA? I'd have just laughed. I said, if he makes the cut, great for him. That's all he's got. Yeah. And then he wins the thing. I think it's going to be
I tell you what, if I had a way to hand off a $100 bill to Jim when he's going to Vegas, I'd say, go ahead and throw it on Phil for me.
Man, the one thing about
it's $100 I'm willing to lose.
The one thing about it is this. It's at a place that he knows, obviously.
Right.
Played there for years, and he has won on that golf course. And it's also the U.S. Open. And it's a tournament that Phil has never won. He's finished sixth twice, six times. Been right there, and I mean, he has lost this golf tournament in a variety, every way to possibly lose it, he's done it. Either just got beat, either blew it on the 72nd hole like he did at Wingfoot or played pretty, you know, just he's done it each and every way. And it's the one that he wants the most. I'm obviously doesn't have it, but I don't see it because of what you said. I mean, he's been on the victory, taking his victory lap and well-deserved victory lap for the win at the PGA. I think it's a tough ask for him to be able to get mentally focused and ready to go to the tune of being in contention on Sunday. You know, last time they were here, he had two drivers in the bag, just crazy stuff like that. Who knows?
Yeah,
I'd have a hard time believing that Phil Mickelson would be anywhere near the leaderboard when it comes to Sunday. Now, one guy that I'll be shocked if he's not, and that's the Spaniard John Rahm. The dude has been playing as good a golf as anybody, and some of the other guys haven't been. And I've kind of got since the Masters on. Some of these, the top names, what they've done. Rahm's been great. And, you know, I asked at the first of the show, what are the chances that the tour and their archaic protocols for the COVID-19 stuff took a $1.7 million check out of his back pocket? He was clearly on a collision course with winning the Memorial up six going into the last day. Mm-hmm. Might as well, you can almost chalk that up a win. Now, there's things that could happen, but it certainly didn't look like that was going to be the case. And then with the way those other guys played the next day, Rahm would have had to shoot damn near 80 to lose. That wasn't going to happen. I think that's something, if you're him, sure, you're happy as can be that you've got the two negative tests in the last week to be able to get out to Torrey. But, man, I think it would be pretty hard for me not to have a little bit of resentment toward the PGA Tour for the way that went down and taking away a win and taking away a ton of money. And also, not only him, but I know for sure if I was his caddy, I would harbor a bunch of resentment because that took a couple $100,000 out of my pocket. And, oh, by the way, I need it a lot more than that guy does.
Right. So are you suggesting that there was a possibility of a false positive?
I don't know how there can't be that possibility with the quickness – that with what we know, mm-hmm. and the way the quickness of the turnaround to, oh, now he's negative, I think that has to be a possibility.
Yeah.
Do you not?
No, yeah, I totally agree. Because of what we know about this virus, how long it takes to get over it and then come up with negative results, he did it pretty quick.
Well, and here's the thing. He was tested after each round.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets it Saturday afternoon, and then by the following Friday he's already fired off a negative test.
Yeah,
when he wasn't positive Friday.
Well, I'll tell you
but
what,
he was Saturday, and heck, he wasn't even positive early Saturday. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I just
the PGA would never admit it.
Oh no,
they would never come out and say it because there would be a giant uproar.
Oh my gosh.
Giant uproar.
You'd think he'd be able to sue over something like that.
So what's the between that and then and now, and I haven't been following, I know you, a bigger golf fan than me, probably have. Has there been any announcement or changes of protocol by the PGA?
Not that I've heard. They're still behind the...
Keep in mind, we're in California, and they're still kind of... I'm not sure if they're fully reopened or...
This is a USGA event, so it's kind of a different governing body outside of just the PGA Tour.
Right, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, there could be a different set of protocols. You know what's been kind of nice?
Hmm.
Once Saturday afternoon, Rahm announced that, hey, I get to play, that's the last we've really heard about it, as far as no one else has been in that boat. So hopefully that continues because... You know, you think about how bad that would be if 2 weeks ago it really was a false positive and you take him out of a six-shot lead at the Memorial. Multiply that by 100 if that were to happen Saturday night here in the U.S. Open.
Oh, boy.
Especially for a guy that's never won a major and been right on the doorstep of doing that for the last couple of years.
Or anybody that's in the top five going into Saturday night or Sunday morning.
And I guess what you could tell me, and I would have to listen to it, is, well, if he just gets vaccinated, he doesn't have to take the test. I understand that. And that's a risk that he has to be willing to take by not taking that vaccine if he's not taking it because of some belief. And I know...
Well, what, wasn't part, he through like the first round?
He had taken the first round, but he was hesitant about it because some of the studies were showing that in young guys like him, some infertility issues were popping up.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, he just had his first kid week before the Masters. You know, that was the big story leading into that for him was he going to be able to play? And, you know, and so that's something that, you know, is you know, a personal choice of his that he's willing to make. And I don't know what you do. He's a tough break, I guess. And you just hope it – you really hope it wasn't a false positive because that's awful
if
it was. Yeah. The Bryson and Brooks thing, Brad Faxon just this morning – on SiriusXM Radio, he's reporting, which, man, if this really happened, what an unbelievably horrible look for a couple of people. But he's reporting the USGA called Bryson DeChambeau and his agent and asked them if they would be okay with that pairing, and Bryson declined. First off, I don't know if I believe it. I don't feel like the USGA is in the business of asking people who they want to play with. This isn't the father-son coming up this weekend in Elk City. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's not a, hey, we want to play with that guy. That's not what this is.
Right.
But if that is true, that's a horrible look on the USGA, first off, and an even worse look on Bryson. It's like every time Bryson gets a chance to kind of turn sentiment back in his favor deal, he goes the exact opposite way. Everybody wants to see it. Just let it happen.
I hope somebody asks him that.
Oh, I do too.
Coming off the course on Thursday.
Well, normally today kind of starts their media obligations pre-tournament. So
someone get brave and ask him.
And it's
straight up.
It's today, Tuesday.
Did you have an opportunity to play with Brooks?
Were you called by the USGA?
Were you called by the USGA, and did you say no?
Well, this is Tuesday. It starts media, and a lot of times, you know what else comes out today? Pairings in advance of Thursday's rounds. So they're missing a huge opportunity.
Absolutely they are.
And there's probably golf purists that don't want to see it because they don't think it belongs in the game. And I guess I understand that. But if you're in the business of growing golf, like the USGA supposedly is, this is a whale of an opportunity to do that, because even people that didn't know who they were a month ago do now and want to see it. This has to happen.
Remember what I said before this came to light? I mean, literally like days before this happened, I said, golf needs a good rivalry. We get it in NASCAR. We get it in every sport. Golf, and I get it. It's a gentleman's game. You take your hat off. You shake their hand. You talk good about them. But it's okay to have rivalries because it makes the sport fun, where you're seeing stuff happen like you want to beat that guy, so I'm going to go for it. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. I mean, the last great golf rivalry was Happy Gilmore and Shooter McGavin. And now we get something like this, and they're missing out on an opportunity because, man, the TV ratings would be out off the charts.
I'm sure that they're worried that it might end up looking like the end of Happy Gilmore out there. And
damn it, people, this is golf!
we probably can't have that at a U.S. Open with, oh, by the way, Bryson DeChambeau as the defending champion.
Oh, yeah. Forget about that little nugget.
Yeah, so, you know... I still want to see it, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I still want to see it. And, I mean, don't you think, let's just pretend like this is, that we live in a world where Bryson DeChambeau got immensely bigger on steroids. Let's just pretend. I'm not saying it did, but let's just pretend like he did.
Okay.
And then the heckling starts. Don't you think you might actually see a Shooter McGavin moment? Where he makes a putt and just starts boom, boom, boom right over to the fans.
Shooter. Would he steal the cup or the jacket or whatever?
Oh, man.
If he loses.
It's pretty outside of his brand or his character But I think that would endear him to people if he would, if he's in this pairing and gives it back instead of just sitting there taking it like the little schoolgirl.
Yeah.
You know, he's a, anyway, I hope we see it. I have a feeling we're not going to get to.
Nah,
unless
it's
it's, you know, the way it works on the weekend.
Right.
But I do think they're missing a huge opportunity to get people that would never watch this a chance to watch it. And the thing about doing it now is there's 2 days to get the word out. It's Bryson and Brooks teeing off at whatever time. Whereas, you know, that can kind of get lost in the shuffle on a Saturday and Sunday when the play is over. Again, who's playing with who? Who's, you know, you don't quite have the build up to it. So I hope it happens.
Did you see the tweet? I can't remember if it's by the from the actor who played Shooter McGavin, or they have this fake Shooter McGavin Twitter account. It's really fun to follow, by the way. Did you see what he said after Rom was taken out?
No.
So back in 96, they let Happy Gilmore play with a busted shoulder, and he beat me. He should have been taken out. He said, man, now times have changed. Stuff like that. It's pretty funny.
What else, U.S. Open-wise? Some of the guys coming in, as I mentioned, Rom has been great. Tied for fifth at the Masters. Got seventh at the Zurich. He did miss the cut at the Wells Fargo, then tied 34th, tied eighth at PGA. I'm giving him a win at Memorial, even though it says WD. I mean, he's going to win that tournament.
Sure.
So he's been on a really good form. Brooks Koepka is right on brand for him. You know, he missed the cut at the Masters, missed the cut at the Byron Nelson, popped up and probably feels like he should have won the PGA instead of Phil, didn't get it done with a tied second, and then he missed the cut last week. So that probably means there he is at the top of the leaderboard come Sunday. Because it's a major, and that's just what he does. But his form hasn't been very good coming in to this week. Justin Thomas has struggled for him as well. He tied 21st at the Masters, tied 13th at the Valspar, tied 26th at the Wells Fargo. He missed the cut at the PGA. And then the last two tournaments, tied 40 and tied 42nd. Bryson hasn't been very good with a 46th at the Masters, one top 10 in his last five starts. The one guy that's been pretty good but hasn't really been in contention outside of Augusta is Xander Schauffele. He was right there in the Masters, tied third. He's had top 15s in three of his last four, did miss the cut at the PGA. And then there's the guy that's probably been more consistent than anybody outside of Jon Rahm, and that's Spieth. Spieth has been a fixture inside the top 10 for most of the season. So, you know, some of those guys, the one thing you don't see in any of these lists with those, you know, six guys I just mentioned, his wins. Nobody's won since Justin Thomas won at the Players, and that was way back in March. So, you know, those top guys, I mean, there's some others out there as well, but those top guys haven't necessarily been on winning form, even though some of them have been pretty consistent with some good finishes.
We'll have to think about making your picks. When making our picks,
which right,
we'll do
that.
What, Thursday?
No, we'll do it tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
Ahead of the tournament, Jared. We all can't. Right. I don't want you waking up. Of course, you can't wake up early on this one because they're on the West Coast.
That's
and
I'm
see
saying.
So-and-so's
we'll
200.
We'll have time on Thursday.
We're doing it.
I don't make picks Wednesday. Then there's a.
We're doing it tomorrow.
There's a positive COVID test.
Well, then you can change Thursday.
Okay. Good. Okay.
You're reading the story about the Corn Ferry Tour. By the way, you know what else happened up there at Wichita in this same round?
What?
None other than one Weatherford's own Quade Cummins. Monday qualified for the event. So he will be in the Wichita Open coming up this week on the Corn Ferry Tour.
Good.
So that's good stuff. Him making his way out to figure out if try to play professional golf after a stellar career at OU.
Think it's worth giving a go?
Absolutely. So you saw the blog post by Kyler Murray.
I just saw the headline and what he said about when asked about the Cowboys.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously he's from the Metroplex.
Sure.
And Allen, and was asked about, was he a Cowboy fan growing up? And he said, hell no. They were S. Well,
okay.
You know, is I have to laugh so I don't cry because he's right. In his entire life. The Cowboys have been as bad as I hate to admit it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was born when?
Gosh, how old is he? Probably born in late 80s, early 90s. 22?
Yeah, so Super Bowls.
Oh, wait. Yeah, whoa, late 90s, I'm sorry.
Late 90s.
Yeah.
So he,
Super Bowls were over.
Yeah.
Troy and Emmett were gone. Mike was already carted off from Philly in an X brace with the fans cheering him on.
Right. So, I mean, that's what was his team, I wonder? Did he ever say?
Probably the Patriots. He seems a little bit like a bandwagoner.
He jumped on the Sooner Schooner, so.
A lot of good that did. Where are the championships, Kyler?
That's funny.
I thought that was pretty interesting that, you know, because I think we probably just assume growing up where he grew up, oh, yeah, you like the Cowboys just because that's, you know, the hometown team. Not so fast, my friend, with Kyler Murray. Are we really gonna get to talk about Aaron Rodgers?
I mean, it is a long summer, so.
It's kind of why you're putting it off, right? Wanting to see what happens and then talk about it.
I mean, everybody knows he's just.
Let's talk about Jeopardy instead. Is there? Let's go with Jeopardy. Do you think, because the one time we did talk about him was his guest hosting, and everybody thought he was pretty good at it,
mm-hmm.
and he's got the right amount of snark anyway. To
yeah.
make him pretty, that was the underrated quality in Alex Trebek. Everybody's like, "Oh, he's such a nice guy. He's Canadian. He's great." Da da da. Yeah, but he was kind of he was pretty snarky.
There were times
when you got it wrong.
There were times, yeah.
He had that air of.
He kind of reminded me of
so much smarter than you.
A couple of teachers I had in college. You know, I was so afraid to answer a question because I was wrong. They look at you kind of.
So here's the question about Jeopardy. Do you think it's harder, just in practice? To find the question to the answer, or do you think it's easier to find the answer to the question? Because as we know on Jeopardy, the question is the answer.
Right.
Do you think it's harder that way or the other?
I think it's harder that way.
Oh, I do too.
You gotta.
Because there could be multiple, that answer. Right. Could be the answer to multiple questions.
That's a good point.
Right?
Right.
Whereas when you ask a question, you're looking for the answer.
Yeah.
Because if I, you know, if the category was broadcasters, I could say Jared Atha. And you know what? You could say, what is the color guy for the Elks? What is the lead play-by-play voice for Canute? What is the former Hammond Warrior? What is... We won't go to the other place. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's harder. I think it's much harder the way that they have set that show up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, half the time I have no idea what they're wanting, and I watch every day. Exactly. Because when you have the answer,
yeah.
Which question did they answer?
I'd much rather go – I'm this guy. I'd much rather go on Wheel of Fortune than Jeopardy.
How heavy do you think the wheel really is?
Not that very heavy.
Do you think what do you think's heavier? The wheel of fortune or the wheel you spin to get into the showcase showdown on Price is Right?
Price is Right.
You think that one's heavier?
Yeah.
Harder to move?
It appears to be when they go up, they grab the very top rung and they're
Yeah, some of them can't get it around once.
No.
Now, in fairness, most of the spins on the Wheel of Fortune don't go around once either.
No. No. No, I'd much rather be on Wheel of Fortune.
Which, do you think the Wheel of Fortune is bigger than the other?
That's a great question. Because how many times have you seen something on TV than you see it in real life? You go, it's not as big as I thought.
Because the Wheel of Fortune looks like it's about 20 feet across.
Right. Right. And it's because of the way they shoot it.
Yeah.
They fill your entire TV screen. So depending on what kind of TV you're watching on, if it's an 80-inch TV, then that wheel's going to look massive, right?
Yeah. And it just
so that's what I'm saying. When you see it in person, I bet it's like a little underwhelming.
And doesn't it feel like from the contestants to Vanna is like, I don't
a
know, 100
mile
feet?
Away. Yeah.
It's probably only like 20 feet.
Yeah, exactly.
Therefore, the wheel's not as big as we think. I knew we could avoid Aaron Rodgers. Look at us go.
We'll get there.
Everybody have a great day. Think about your U.S. Open picks. Text them in to us tomorrow or call them in. Either way, we'll be back tomorrow. Everybody have a wonderful afternoon.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Kaup. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.